happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is January 16th, 2015. We're off to a new year, turbulent year, judging by what just transpired in Paris and then the follow-up raids in Belgium. We live in a world filled with violence and turmoil, unfortunately, but we're here to try to sort out the craziness and figure out what it is our government is doing, unfortunately, often not for us, but to us. Those of you familiar with the program know that I'm a retired senior special agent with the former INS, Immigration and Naturalization Service. So as you might expect, the focus of many of my programs is on immigration, national security, and the way that our failures to secure our borders and enforce our immigration laws impact America and Americans. Today we're going to go off in a slightly different direction for at least a part of the program. A gentleman, young man by the name of Demetrius Miner will be joining me. He is a member of the National Advisory Council of the Project 21 Black Leadership Network and serves as a pastoral assistant at the Calvary New Life Tabernacle in Atlanta, Georgia. And in addition, he is a former conservative talk show host, blogger, his website, DemetriusSpeaks.com, former White House intern of the Bush administration, preacher and graduate of the Pentecostals of Alexandria Minister Training Center. There's a mouthful. And his writings have been featured in the Washington Times, Freedom Works, and Town Hall. And while we're on the topic of writings and blogging and that sort of thing, of course, I'm sure that most of you are familiar with where my writings can be seen. First of all, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, one word. I also am a senior fellow and have been for a number of years for a terrific organization out on the West Coast, Californians for Population Stabilization, and their awesome website, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. And we're going to be looking at Martin Luther King's birthday today and my discussions with Demetrius. And it's important to note that CAPS has been running ads, commercials, has been writing and blogging quite a bit about the impact of the failures of the immigration system on America's minority and black communities, the unemployment rate, the poverty. And that's something that we really need to look at this evening. I think it's entirely appropriate. I also write for Front Page Magazine, published by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I write for Progressives for Immigration Reform. I anticipate a new article will be published by them on their website next week. The Social Contract Quarterly has my article in it, and that should be available within the next 3 or 4 weeks. So it's about getting the message out there. It's about having the conversation, pardon me, that the mainstream media doesn't want to have. Bear with me. I think Kermit the Frog has set up shop in my throat. I was actually supposed to be at the Tea Party Convention in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This would have been my fourth consecutive year down there, but whatever this bug is, I decided that discretion was the better part of valor. So I am not in South Carolina. I am home in New York, and that's why we're doing the program today. I anticipated taking the day off today, but there is always that lining, the silver lining to the cloud, and in this case, it will be my ability to do my program this evening and have a terrific guest, John, joining us within the next few minutes, hopefully. But there's so much to talk about. And, you know, everyone is all excited. The Republicans have gained control of the United States Senate, and look at all the great stuff that's going to happen. And I got to tell you, I am tamping down my enthusiasm, especially where immigration is concerned. You know, I've written about it. In fact, I was just on J.D. Hayworth's program over at Newsmax TV yesterday, and I did another interview today with Ed Berliner over at Newsmax, and I'll be doing some more TV next week. And the issue that I keep coming back to is that while the Republican leadership has been jumping up and down and howling about how Obama, with his executive orders, has undermined the Constitution, and I believe that he has, And this isn't about being left or right, but right or wrong. You know, those of you familiar with me know that I'm a lifelong Democrat, or at least I'm registered as a Democrat, but I've always voted as an independent. We should all vote as independents. Both parties are disastrous for the average American. But the Republican leadership has never talked about the impact of Obama's programs on national security. This idea that we give people who snuck into the country, let's face it, if you run the border, this undocumented nonsense, which started with Jimmy Carter and his propaganda and his Orwellian newspeak, these folks are uninspected. So to give them identity documents without an interview, without being able to verify who they are or when they got here, is an act of national suicide. But we'll get back to that. I see my guest is on the line. Demetrius Miner, welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. Thank you so much for joining us. Happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday to you, sir. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
No, my pleasure. Judy Kent over at Project 21 speaks well of you, and I've worked with Judy over the years, and I'm looking forward to hearing your perspectives. I know that we have a generational gap, you and I, but I think as Americans we should probably be on the same page on many,
right,
many issues. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree to that, especially when it comes to an American son and Martin Luther King Jr.
Absolutely. And, you know, you wrote a very interesting article about Martin Luther King. I'm curious if you well, first of all, why don't you give my audience a quick thumbnail sketch about who you are, and so they can understand, you know, as the saying goes, where you're coming from, as we used to say.
Absolutely. No problem, Mike. My name is Demetrius Miner. I am a member of the Advisory Council Board known as Project 21. I'm also a minister. I'm a pastoral assistant at Calvary New Life Tabernacle here in Atlanta, Georgia. I am the author of the forthcoming book, Preservation and Purpose, that is due April the 28th. You can find out more information about that at balcony7.com. I'm also a blogger and editor. And that's me in a nutshell, my friend.
Well, wonderful. And you wrote about Martin Luther King, and you used a word that resonated. You referred to so many of our politicians as the deconstructors, if I'm not mistaken. And I've often thought of the politicians from both sides of the aisle truly deconstructing America, hammering American jobs, American wages. It seems as though any politician who runs for any office, from dog catcher to president, promises to help to create jobs. But nobody talks about the need to liberate jobs by making sure we enforce the immigration laws and make certain that Americans get first shot at the jobs. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that.
Well, you're absolutely right, Mike. You know, every politician, regardless of the, you know, party that they decide to align themselves with, on the campaign trail, they give us a plethora of promises and ideas that they care to implement. And we've seen one too many times, you know, when Mr. Smith goes to Washington, all of a sudden changes his mind or changes his stance on the issue.
Well, someone changes his mind for him, perhaps.
Perhaps. You know, whether that's a lobbyist or, you know, whatever the case may be. And, you know, we're seeing where Washington's growing while the rest of America is shrinking. And that is a problem that is widespread. That is the problem that needs to be addressed. And what I believe is that not too many lawmakers fear their constituents. After all, if constituents keep voting in the same people over and over who have no good track record, who ignore their needs, who don't have a leg to stand on, why should Washington heed to their demands if the citizens are not holding them accountable? So inevitably, you know, the ball comes back to our court. You know, we have the power.
I guess you agree with Mr. Gruber when he talked about the dumb Americans then.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
What I've said is this. You and I are frustrated when Americans don't show common sense or awareness, but people like Gruber and most politicians see opportunities in the dumbing down of America.
Well, I think Americans are smarter than politicians, I think, give us credit for.
Let me stop you. So then how do you account for the power of the incumbency? I mean, we saw things go a little different on this election, but I'm not so sure that the new crop is going to be any better than the old crop. You know, meet the old boss, same as the new boss, or meet
right.
the new boss, same as the old boss. But, you know, when you hear about immigration and they're already talking about, oh, we've got to bring in the high-tech workers, how in the world do Americans, especially America's minorities, aspire to break out of poverty when wages are on the decline, when we bring in more foreign workers than the number of new jobs that we're creating, and politicians have disingenuously turned immigration into a race issue when it's not anything near a race issue?
Well, my friend, you've been in politics long enough. Well, not just politics, but I do notice that there is a generational gap between us. But you've been living long enough to know that politics is all about appealing to one's emotions.
Yep.
When you see presidential candidates on the stage during the debates, the average American may not say, oh, that guy's record is better than his. But Americans are more inclined to say, that guy's more relatable. Now on the other side of that, Americans are able to notify when they're being manipulated, when they're being lied to. For example, things such as Obamacare and the mitigated disaster that it's become,
right.
The debt, the deficit. We're able to notify and target those areas that politicians are not being truthful with us about. The problem is that when it comes to voting time and to electing those who are qualified for public service, many tend to lie on emotion instead of substance. And that is something that needs to change among the electorate.
So how would you change it? I'm going to give you a magic wand. How would you change it, Demetrius?
I'm afraid that's the answer is far more complex than, you know, my experience.
Okay. Let's twist the question in a slightly different direction. How can you trust politicians of any sort? And there are some good people in Washington, but you really got to look far and wide to find them. But when the black leadership, the black caucus, do you really believe they're looking out, pardon me, for the best interests of black Americans or any Americans, but especially black Americans? They call themselves the black caucus, but they've signed on for comprehensive immigration reform. They equate illegal aliens with the civil rights movement, which makes me want to pull hair out of my head. You know, I'm Jewish, and I get crazy when I see people use the term Holocaust to describe every and anything. It trivializes what the Holocaust was. I was named for my grandmother who died in Poland. Doesn't it bother you when you hear about the civil rights movement and they say, well, this is just about civil rights? If you're here illegally, you should have no expectation of civil rights. Be treated fairly in terms of human rights, sure. Due process, if you're accused of a crime, absolutely. But to talk about civil rights for people who are essentially trespassers, have I lost my mind?
Well, I'm with you, my friend. I believe that it is an absurd and incorrect comparison. And the majority of the Congressional Black Caucus is of a liberal mindset. So therefore, they're going to promote the values and the ideas that fall along in the category of liberalism. So that is the course of action that they believe is appropriate for the country to take. Now, this is where conservatives and people of conservative principle must speak out and control the narrative and say, you know what, no, this is not going to be good for any community, especially the black community. This is going to hurt jobs within the African-American community, which already we see that they have low numbers as far as participating in the workforce. And that's just going to get worse if we condone.
But do you really think this is a liberal versus conservative? Are you familiar with Barbara Jordan?
I am familiar with Barbara Jordan.
Barbara Jordan took the same position you and I would take on immigration, and she was certainly a liberal. And as I said, I'm a registered Democrat. See, I don't see this as left or right. I see this as right or wrong.
it's a matter of communication. When you're talking about immigration, you're talking about something that's very personal. There's people who have loved ones who may be here illegally, trying to find work, trying to find jobs. The problem that conservatives are having and encountering is that when there are some who come across as being anti-immigrant and saying things like, well, you know, deport them all or, you know, send them back home, it comes across as being unrational, irrational, and unreasonable. I don't believe that the policy that conservatives want to implement is wrong. I believe that they're having trouble with the messaging part.
What policy is that?
Most conservatives that I talk to are not against immigration. They want to make sure that people do it the right way. And then also protecting the border and making sure that there is enough law enforcement there that can handle the border crisis.
When's the border? So where do you see the border?
I'm talking about the border along Texas and the southeastern states there.
Do you realize that that's a subterfuge?
I don't believe that protecting the border is a bad thing. I think it would help with the immigration crisis that we're having
now. But here's the problem, Demetrius. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with my background. I was an agent for 30 years. And
mm-hmm.
The border exists in all 50 states. Simply having everybody focus all of the attention on the U.S.-Mexican border, albeit an important border, no argument. But the terrorists of 9/11 didn't run that border. The terrorists for the 93 attacks did not run that border. The Tsarnaev brothers who attacked the Boston Marathon did not run that border. The entire immigration system is dysfunctional and lacks integrity. So what we're doing is seeing politicians trying to be deceptive and saying to everybody, well, once we secure that border, we can give millions of people temporary status. No interviews, no way of knowing who they are. They trespassed on America. They snuck in. We spend over $3 billion a year doing inspections at ports of entry. So this begs the question, why do we go through the charade of employing more than 20,000 people at Customs and Border Protection? Why do we spend $3.3 billion a year on doing the inspections process when people can simply enter the country by running our borders, walk in, and expect to be given permission to remain here? That's crazy, especially given the 9/11 Commission findings. I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. They talked about immigration as being an integral part of national security. So you've got the politicians
right.
from both sides of the aisle not even willing to talk about the 9/11 Commission, but willing to provide lawful status to millions of people whose true identities can't be verified. What could possibly go wrong? You see, this is why I don't believe this is a left or right issue, but an American issue, because they've been bought out. Campaign contributions, in my judgment, are little more than legalized bribes. What say you?
Well, I do believe that the politics of it all has made it a more complex issue. I'm not an immigration expert. I don't have the answer to the crisis, but I know it's more complex than just say, okay, 1, 2, 3, let's do this. I mean, there's a lot of factors that you have to consider. I don't think that protecting the border is the only solution, but I think
But do you
it,
think
it,
it's
it
anti-immigrant
helps.
To secure or to protect the border or enforce the laws?
No, I don't.
It isn't.
I don't think
you
it's
see the problem
I don't
that
think
we have.
It's anti-immigrant.
I'll tell you what the problem is that we have, and you tell me what you think. The people that make money off of open borders, and these are the banks, it's the Chamber of Commerce, it's the hotel travel industry, it's the universities. We have over 1 million foreign students in the United States right now. They're looking at the money. And the way that they went after those of us who are being reasonable and saying, look, let's enforce the laws. By the way, the same laws that tell us who to kick out and who to keep out also tell us who to let in. Do you know that every year we admit more than 1 million lawful immigrants into the United States, more than the rest of the world combined? So how on earth can you be anti-immigrant when your position is to enforce the laws that are on the books that already permit more than 1 million lawful immigrants to enter, permit hundreds of thousands of aliens to become United States citizens through the naturalization process? So the other side is using the bullying tactic of saying, oh, they are anti-immigrant, which was brilliant from their angle, because once you're identified as being anti-anything, you're in a problem. It's hard to defend yourself. If you look at the abortion issue, it's pro-choice, pro-life. Nobody wants to be anti. The other side was very good at labeling those of us who believe in secure borders. And what do they say? Oh, you're anti-immigrant. So now we're painted as being vile and evil. Meanwhile, the damage being done to immigrant communities and America's minority communities is unbelievable. And, of course, it's across the spectrum. It also impacts all Americans and all America. But do you see the problem that we're having? We really, I think, need to get away from labeling this as a conservative concern and look at it more as an American issue to protect American citizens and Americans' jobs.
Well, you know, I would agree to that. It's all about messaging. It's all about
yep.
being able to form a constructive dialogue without an hyperbole of emotions or statements that can be deemed as derogatory towards a certain group of people. But I think it's being able to express concern over national security, but also being willing to embrace the fact that there are people who are willing to come here legally and enjoy American benefits.
And that's fine, and we do have that mechanism. It's, you know, we're hearing, well, there's no way for them to come here. We admit more than a million a year.
Sure.
So that's, I mean, it's lie after lie. But the problem is, how do you reach out, let's say, to the black community, pardon me, and have that conversation? You know, I'm Jewish. I was a B'nai B'rith president in college. It is almost impossible for me to walk into a Jewish organization and have a receptive ear to any honest conversation about immigration. That's how good this vilification has been for the other side and how much damage it's done to America. As soon as you say secure the border, you're branded as a racist. I mean, is that astonishing or is that astonishing?
Well, you know, we live in a time where not just that about, you know, the border, but now, you know, if you go against anything that the Obama White House proposes, you know, you're a racist. Or,
yeah.
you know, if you're Republican, conservative, you're
a racist. How
does
that make you feel as a black American? How does that make you feel? How
it's
frustrating must that be for you?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate. It definitely feels like there has been a decline in race relations and the progression of racial relations as well. I think nobody should have to fear talking to anyone, regardless of their race or ethnic group. I believe that, first of all, trying to garner someone's attention into what you have to say, try to find out what you have in common. Too many times there's debates about what we have, the differences that we make. And the left and right is always contrasting one another. Well, let's see what we have in common. You will find in the black community, in the Latino community, and just about any community, that a lot of people are family-oriented. They're concerned about their family. So when you open up a discussion about that, you talk about education. You talk about the school system. You talk about your neighborhood. You talk about your community. Open up to people. Make people feel welcome. Make people feel that you are a part of them. It's kind of annoying and irritating, to be honest, when people always want to talk politics with you. And I understand that politics, you know, is at the center of a lot of issues. But, you know, there's people that want to talk about their families and what's affecting their
right.
families and,
yep.
and things like that. And once you begin to discuss those issues, I think a lot of people will find a huge commonality between them. And that will help them build a relationship with people.
I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. So let me ask you another question then. This begs another question, though. And it will be about politics, but so forgive me. But how do you react to the term black vote? Doesn't that seem like a terrible form of profiling, that if you're black, you're expected to vote a certain way or have certain values, or if you're Jewish, the Jewish vote or the Latino vote? To my thinking, this is a despicable form of profiling. And yet the same journalists, so-called, who pontificate endlessly on the Sunday morning talk shows, the ones who scream about police profiling, will then immediately start to discuss the Latino vote, the black vote. Do you agree, or maybe you disagree? But to me, this really seems like a terrible form of profiling. What are your opinions?
Well, the term black vote doesn't necessarily offend me, but it is offensive when people automatically assume that you're of a political persuasion because of the color of your skin.
And isn't that a prejudice? Then isn't that a prejudicial statement? If I see a black guy, I know what's going to appeal to him or her immediately.
Of course. It's like the term acting white and acting black.
Yep. I was reading about that. That was fascinating, by the way. Why don't you
right.
get into that a little bit for my audience? What do you mean by acting black or acting white? That's a fascinating concept.
Well, it is fascinating because when it's implied, there's a negative connotation that goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
If you hear the term acting black, you know, one is to assume that that person is acting of a ghetto nature, or they're uneducated, or they're using slang. You know, these are characteristics that I've seen.
Or they're wearing pants hanging off their rear end.
Absolutely, which is something that I've seen white people do. Or
yep.
if a black person is accused of acting white, that means, you know, they got the preppy schoolboy look. You know, they actually wear clothes that fit them. They talk proper. They talk educated. And, again, there are many educated people. So this racial stereotype connotation is another indicator that we are divided by class, socioeconomic status, cultural status. And it feeds into the liberal narrative that divides us.
How do we overcome it?
We overcome it individual by individual. That's where I think it comes down to. And it comes by having a mutual respect for one another. It comes, people have got to be willing to understand different cultures, different practices, different lifestyles. And at the same time, be yourself. Be true to who you are. But I think we have to build relationships with people who don't dress like us, who don't look like us, who don't share the same pigmentation. And when we build relationships with people, we change communities one at a time. I think everything's going to have to start at a local level. So many people are so anxious to jump in and change everything on a federal scene. But sometimes the biggest impact and the biggest influence comes by what you do in your local community.
Well, you know, Tip O'Neill, the former Speaker of the House, famously remarked that all politics is local.
I remember that. Yeah.
You're not old enough,
you know,
to remember that.
Well, I mean, there is some truth to that, you know.
I'm just busting your chops, you know.
Well, you're definitely entitled to do that.
You know, it's refreshing. I know that you're a lot younger than I am, but you're very aware of what's going on. You know, I wish that more people, I'm going to guess you're in your 20s now, correct?
It's my last year in my 20s, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, the big 3-0 looming large on the horizon. Well, you know what they said in that film way back when, don't trust anybody over 30, so look out. But, you know, it's important to understand things from the perspective that you've just articulated. You know, I find it remarkable. One of the Republicans just got castigated because they said, oh, he may have gone before a KKK group. I don't know if he did or not. But, you know, I've been on
right.
radio programs. I do a lot of interviews as well as doing interviews. I've been interviewed. And sometimes you get on a program and you don't really know the background of the host. You get a phone call. Are you willing to go on the show? And I remember I was on a program, and it turned out the guy was a member of the John Birch Society. And immediately, I mean, within 10 minutes, it was all over the Internet that I'd been on a John Birch's radio program. Now, what was remarkable, because some of the folks I work with called me up and said, were you really on this extremist's program? I said, well, if he is an extremist, I have no idea. But I do know we argued. My segment ran 45 minutes. We argued for 40 out of the 45 minutes. You know, he introduced me. I said, how are you? And we were off to the races right after that. It went downhill quickly. So it wasn't
right.
as though I had said something that was outrageous. It was guilt by association. And it dawned on me, and you tell me what you think of this, because I see that you're a talk show host, and you do interviews and so forth. Wouldn't it be a nice thing if we could go on the programs of people whose viewpoints differed from our own and had an honest, open conversation, mutually respectful, but where we clearly articulate our ideas unapologetically and have the moral guts, the moral fiber, to stand up to the people who try to bully you and say, no, you're getting it wrong, this is my position, and now you know who I am. So instead of encouraging that kind of discourse, which is really what the First Amendment, at least I thought, was supposed to be about, today we live in a world where, because of the desire to, I believe, divide and conquer, God forbid you go on a program from somebody who's politically on the other side, and you wind up getting castigated for being on that program. Your thoughts?
Well, you're not going to make a difference in an echo chamber.
And you can't do missionary work inside the church. Even though I'm a Jew, I know that. You got to go into the hinterland, right?
Right. You have to go, you know, if you really want to be the hands and feet of Christ, you need to go outside the four walls of the church.
Right.
I mean, you know, anybody who studies Scripture would know that the majority of the people that Jesus rebuked were the religious people. But as far as that's concerned about people who are different than us, I share this quick story with you.
Sure.
My teacher, my history professor, Cowboy Mike, and one of the greatest professors I ever had. Yeah, he was a Democrat. He told me that for extra credit, I had to go to a group of Democrats and defend George W. Bush's presidency.
Hello.
I went in there knowing I was in the minority. I went in there knowing that I was pretty much entering the lion's den. But you know what I did? I went there anyway. I showed up. I was respectful. I embraced them. And even though I had a different political persuasion, I gained their respect. That's what it comes down to. Connecting with people, building relationship with people, showing mutual respect to one another. In my circle of friends, I have people who are Democrat and Republican, liberal and conservative, and I show them both respect and dignity.
Absolutely.
And that's what it comes down to.
Well, you know, I've been on college campuses. I've been at Yale Law School, Central Washington, outside of Seattle. You name the universities, I've been there. And very often what I find remarkable, a lot of people start out screaming at me. And it doesn't take but 10 minutes, and then they start to understand where I'm really coming from, and they start screaming with me because of what you're talking about, the need to hold your ground, be respectful, and try to get people to come to common grounds. See, I really believe that if Americans, irrespective of race, irrespective of religion, irrespective of politics, if we really sat down and had an honest conversation about our dreams for the future, our dreams for our children, I just became a grandpa, my dreams for my granddaughter.
Congratulations.
You know, thank you. Most of us find that we are certainly in agreement on many, many, many more issues than we're in a disagreement about.
Absolutely. But we've let the media, we've let tradition convince us to think a certain way. Instead of thinking on
group
our own.
Think.
And
groupthink. It's a stampede.
Right.
It's a stampede.
Absolutely.
Listen, I want to thank you so much. It was really delightful. I have to get you back on this program.
Thank you
refreshing.
For having me. We'd love to come back.
Awesome. Again, why don't you give out your website and, again, the information about your book. I know you want to sell those things when they come out, so why don't you provide that
Demetrius? I'm glad you asked. The book is called Preservation and Purpose. You can pre-order it now at Balcony 7. That's the number 7, balcony7.com. You can also find my writings and my op-ed at demetriusspeaks.com as well.
Awesome. It's a little bit late, but I still wish you and those close to you a very happy, healthy, safe, peaceful new year.
Likewise, my friend. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a blast.
My pleasure. Have a wonderful weekend. I look forward to speaking with you soon.
Thank you. God bless.
Be well. Well, that was Demetrius Minor, a fascinating young man, really terrific conversation. And this is really what it's about. You know, if we're going to celebrate the fact that we're Americans, then we need to celebrate the First Amendment. We need to celebrate the idea that we can have conversations, we can disagree with each other. It doesn't make us the enemies of each other. The folks that are trying to polarize America are the enemies of the Constitution. They're the enemies of America. Conversation, discussion, compromise if need be, absolutely vital to the well-being of this country and our citizens. And that's something that's being left out of the conversation. Because you look at the politicians, you listen to the rhetoric, you listen to the lies, you look at the parties fighting each other, and I got to tell you, folks, it reminds me of tag team wrestling when I was a kid. You know, growing up, you would see Buddy Rogers and Haystacks Calhoun and Antonina Rocca and all these other characters, and they'd go after each other, and you thought it was for real. They'd run each other into the turnbuckle, and they were probably spraying ketchup on them, but it looked like blood, and I'd go to sleep at night really worked up, thinking that one of those wrestlers who I sort of liked, identified with, whatever, oh, my God, he went to the hospital. They'd take him out on a stretcher. It was all a joke. It was all theater. And I really believe that a lot of the acrimony between the Democrats and Republicans is nothing more than theater. They're being paid campaign contributions by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, by the American Immigration Lawyers Association, by other people who, quite frankly, in my judgment, don't give a damn about the well-being of the average American or the average American family. They see us as a source of revenue. They look at the average American the way a turkey farmer looks at his flock. All that they see in American citizens are consumers or potential students, whatever, people that can be wrung dry of their money. Look at what the bankers did when the banks failed and you had Alan Greenspan standing there before Chuck Schumer's immigration subcommittee referring to Americans with skills. In other words, educated Americans, because the immigration law talks about skilled labor. Skilled labor is another way of saying people with degrees, by the way, or people who, it could be tradesmen, but usually in the context, it's people with the degrees, the STEM workers, science, technology, engineering, math. Said, oh, these skilled workers are getting this wage premium. They're making too much money. He actually said there was too much money concentrated in that sector of the economy. What sector, folks? The middle class sector has too much money. What was the solution? Open up immigration quotas. Make those Americans compete with foreign workers. And if you can do that, then he said you could take care of that privileged elite. Those are the words he used. Go to michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, front page magazine. I've been writing about this extensively. Go to the United States Senate website, House Judiciary Committee, Subcommittee on Immigration, April 30th, 2009. There's Alan Greenspan referring to American middle-class workers as the privileged elite earning a wage premium because they're not being made to compete with foreign workers. In fact, I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine about how, you know, at this dangerous time, Obama wants shields down. I've written about it for CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org. You need to enlighten yourselves. You need to then take the information and go to your friends and neighbors and wake them up. You need to understand the betrayal being perpetrated on us. Because what Greenspan said was that the goal needs to be to greatly reduce wage inequality. And everybody, but everybody has jumped on this bandwagon, folks, of wage inequality. What in the world are they talking about? See, most people, when they hear wage inequality, oh, Gates and Zuckerberg and those bums, oh, they're worth billions and I'm going to make more money. No, that's not what they're talking about. They have everyone bamboozled into believing that's what they're talking about, but the reality is far different. What they're saying is we need to reduce the gap between America's skilled workers and America's unskilled workers. What does that really mean? We need to narrow the gap in earnings between the middle class and the poor. And how do we do it? By eliminating the wage premium that elevates the middle class above the poor. if we get rid of that wage premium, then the middle class wages will get closer to the poor, and then everything will be wonderful for America. Can you imagine something as outrageous as that? Why wasn't this covered by the media? And why is it? Why is it, folks, that when I approach politicians on the Republican side, and say to them, why aren't you running that clip of Greenspan testifying before Chuck Schumer, talking about eliminating the wage premiums of the privileged elite middle class? Why don't you run this ad and say, look at what this guy stands for, and he testified for Chuck? You know why they don't run the ads, folks? Because they are on the same page. In fact, they usually look upset when they pull out the statement made by Greenspan. It's available online. You can still see a video of that bum sitting before that hearing making that statement. And that syrupy, bland, dead voice. It's funny, I was actually on a radio program the morning after that hearing, and my head was still vibrating and reverberating from what that piece of trash had to say about American middle-class workers. And I was on this radio program, and the young lady whose show I was on, I can't recall who it was, but I remember she said to me on the program, what did you think of Greenspan? I said, well, I realized I was witnessing a first when I listened to him speak. And she said, what kind of a first? I said, it was the first time someone testified who was suffering from rigor mortis. I mean, this is vile. This is god-awful. And you listen to the talking heads on most of the major news programs, and I don't care what network, it's all the above. Only they would pass comprehensive reform, the economy will take off. The Wall Street Journal is a big advocate for this insanity. Go to the UN website. Go to the World Bank website. You know what they predict? If our government is corrupt enough, of course they don't say it that way, but if we pass comprehensive reform, the remittances, the money wired out of the United States will go up. How does that help America? How does that help our balance of payments? How does that help the deficit? How does that help the average American family? This damages America. This damages our families. This damages American jobs. And the UN makes it clear, because they want it to happen, because they want that money to be ripped out of our economy and shipped to the third world where the corrupt leaders can dip into that till. And that's what they're saying. They said that if we enact comprehensive reform, the money will go up. Last year, at least $125 billion, with a B, billion dollars, was wired out of the United States by foreign workers, legal and illegal. And that's the visible money. Think how much money was invisible. Now, economists talk about something known as the multiplier effect. And what that says is that if you put a dollar into the economy, ultimately that dollar will generate three more dollars in business. For example, you earn a paycheck. Let's say you're a carpenter and you work on a housing project and you get paid. So you go out and buy a pair of shoes, and the shoe salesman gets his commission. And the guy that owns the shoe store makes some money off of the sale. Of course, in the old days, I would have said, and then the money goes to the shoemaker in Maine or wherever. But no, now it goes, you know, to Malaysia, God knows where. But the people inside the United States are making money off of that sale. So maybe the guy that sells the shoes takes that money and he goes out and buys a new refrigerator. Although I got to tell you, I'm very proud that I bought a refrigerator 2 weeks ago that was actually made in the United States. Big labels all over the interior. Made in the United States by U.S. workers. And, you know, that right there convinced me that that was the refrigerator I wanted to buy. It was a Whirlpool. I mean, we should be looking for those darn labels that say made in America. Not made in North America, made in United States of America. And it said it right on that label, and I said, you know what, I'm buying this thing. But the idea of the multiplier effect is that the money percolates through the economy. That was the idea behind the economic stimulus package. Makes sense. So when you take $125 billion and just suck it out of the economy, the multiplier effect works in reverse. The money doesn't get to circulate. The money doesn't get to generate new business. The impact is the equivalent of losing $500 billion. This is serious, folks. This is serious. Because that's about how much our deficit goes up every year. $500 billion. So then why is it that when you look at the business programs on all the major networks, all you keep hearing is we need comprehensive reform so we can send more money out of our economy, so we can bring more foreign workers in, so we can displace more American workers, so we can lower the wages of Americans who don't lose their jobs? Because when they have these conversations, these geniuses of economics, they'll talk about that 5.6% unemployment rate. But then they sometimes, if you're lucky, will make note of the non-participation of 100 million working-age Americans. How in blazes do you have the chutzpah to talk about 5.6% and then as a footnote say, oh, and by the way, that number doesn't take 100 million Americans into account? This is like the kind of garbage that used to come out of Russia propaganda with Pravda and Izvestia. And then you have members of Congress here in the Republican side. There were 26 who would not stop Obama's Dreamer program. Oh, it's about the children. The age cutoff is 31. We're giving identity documents to hundreds of thousands of aliens who trespassed on America. Yes, they claim they came as kids, but there's no face-to-face interview and no field investigation. And now the president, Obama, is willing to work with Mexico, who will give us documents to prove when their citizens came to the U.S. so they will qualify. These are lies, folks. This is the same Mexico that held a U.S. Marine for how many months because of a mistake he made? These are our friends? Really? Honestly? Does anyone believe this trash? So now the Republicans are all geared up. We're going to pass comprehensive reform. Why? Well, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is pushing it. Gates and Zuckerberg and Silicon Valley, those thugs are pushing it. Why? Because this would mean lower wages. One of the things comprehensive reform has as a component, and no one talks about this, is to greatly increase the number of H-1B visas. So the president is offering free school. You know, why don't we make it free ice cream and free Corvettes? Free school. Who knows where the money's going to come from? And by the way, Fox News did do a story that was very interesting, that the people who would be legalized under the Obama program, and we're talking about, I don't even know how many million, would all be entitled to the earned tax credit. So if they're not making enough money, Uncle Sam will cut them a check to supplement their income, which is why, and I know my conservative friends disagree, I believe in a higher minimum wage because we pay one way or the other. Either we pay through the earned tax credit, or corporations pay a little bit more, and the price of items may go up a little bit. But I would rather give people a higher salary so that working becomes more significant to their income. The more somebody earns on the job, the more important that job becomes. The less you earn, the less you care. So we need to incentivize work and achievement. But it's increasingly impossible because we keep bringing in more foreign workers than the number of new jobs that we're creating. How in the world does that help America or Americans? The answer is pretty obvious. It doesn't. And then we see where the president is letting people out of Gitmo. Now, these are hardened terrorists. And we saw what just happened in Brussels. And we saw what just happened in Paris. In Brussels, they had the raids. And they're talking about how, well, the aliens are able, or the terrorists, rather, are able to move freely around Europe. Well, guess what? We have a problem with the Mexican border here in the United States. We have a visa waiver program. And finally, Senator Feinstein said, oh, we need to revisit this issue about the visa waiver program. You think? You think? Look at it? No. We need to act and end it. You see, it's not just the Mexican border. And when you talk about the visa waiver program, as Feinstein is, then what you're really saying is anybody who enters through any port of entry, any international airport, any land port, any seaport, coming in on the visa waiver program. So right there and then, we're moving away from this notion that the be-all and end-all of what's wrong with immigration is the Mexican border. And then how about the people that are admitted and abscond and disappear into the woodwork and no one knows where they are and no one looks for them? It's a game of hide and seek where the illegals hide and we don't seek. And then what about the aliens who lie on applications so they can get green cards and citizenship? Look at the Tsarnaev family. They received political asylum, meaning they couldn't go back to Russia. They articulated credible fear. How about incredible fear? They no sooner got lawful status in America than what did they do, folks? They voluntarily, of their own free will, their own volition, hopped on airplanes and flew back to Russia, the country that they had to have claimed they could never go back to because it would have caused them major problems. They would have faced persecution or worse, according to the applications that they had to have filled out in order to have been granted political asylum and ultimately residency, and some of them got citizenship. They lied, and they got away with it. But no one's talking about that. No one's talking about the threat of terrorists coming to the United States. Oh, yes, we're hearing about the terror cells. And they're saying, well, maybe we should strip terrorists of their citizenship. How about if we prevented terrorists from getting citizenship in the first place? Pardon me. That's the issue. But nobody wants to talk about it. So they'll talk about, and Ted Cruz will talk about, oh, we're going to strip these people of their citizenship if they're fighting for ISIS. I agree. The law says if you go to fight for an enemy country, you lose your citizenship. Well, ISIS wants to declare itself its own little country and its own little parallel universe. Great. You go fight for ISIS, we prove it, you ought to be on the pathway to losing your citizenship. But how about if we don't give terrorists citizenship in the first place? How about if we really scrutinize those applications? Because we're not. We're not. There is no integrity to the process. So we are naturalizing people who want to kill us. Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, naturalized a year before he set the bomb off in Times Square, the SUV. We have no idea who we're giving citizenship to. This is a free-for-all, and it's disastrous. It's destroying the economy. It's destroying the middle class. It's destroying our educational system. We're flooding our schools with kids that can't even read or write English. And by the way, a number of years ago, the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, said that it costs 20% to 40% more to educate kids who aren't fluent in the English language. And what are we doing about it? Bringing more in, you see? Our country is messed up because we have politicians who don't care about the average American citizen. They believe that for America to do well, American companies need to do well. And how many American companies are there really? Companies that don't pay income tax in America, don't necessarily hire Americans and build factories overseas, but then they slap a little American flag on the shrink wrap and say, we're an American company. You know, I was born on a Wednesday, not last Wednesday. I have a different notion. You tell me what you think. I believe that for America to do well, Americans must do well. U.S. citizens must do well. We say a pledge of allegiance to the flag. It's time the damn politicians set a pledge of allegiance to we the people, the citizens of the United States. I am so sorry that I'm not down in South Carolina. You can hear my raspy voice. But this convention is really important. The presidential election coming up in 2016 is pivotal. And it's not enough to say, oh, well, Obama's gone. Who's going to replace him? Which party is going to produce a true leader that puts the citizens ahead of everybody else? That's the issue, folks. That's the issue. And I know that Demetrius thinks this is more about conservative versus liberal, and I don't. I think this is deconstructionalist versus those who believe in America. I am tired of the be-all and end-all of the success story in America being the profit margins for corporations and Bill Gates and Zuckerberg. Zuckerberg, who created something known as a hackathon a year and a half ago. He offered to teach computer code to young people. Amazing. Mentored them himself. And who did he do it for? Illegal aliens, so they could learn how to use computers to to notify politicians that they need to pass comprehensive immigration reform. And now that delusional wackaloon, the inventor of Facebook, and you really got to see the movie about this piece of work, despicable. And it was funny because Lewis Black, who I believe is probably a liberal, I don't know, was talking about how Zuckerberg actually made the statement that he thought that Facebook was as significant for civilization as the Gutenberg printing press. Do you want to talk about delusional? Do you want to talk about somebody who has a very tenuous grip on reality? Facebook is to be equated with the Gutenberg printing press? Really? These people are so self-absorbed, it is beyond belief. They don't know where the real world is, and they can't find it with one of their computerized GPSs either. What I want to know is why weren't the opportunities that he was so eager to give to illegal aliens, why weren't they provided to American kids living in poverty? How about to returning GIs who lost their limbs defending his sorry butt? Because I am sure that Zuckerberg, if he heard a loud noise, would hide under the chair and assume the fetal position. So the GIs that are coming back are screwed, but if you're here as an illegal alien, then this guy will embrace you. This is about as anti-American as it gets. You know, I'm tired of looking at those photos and people saying these are the faces of the immigrant children. I don't like to see any children living in poverty. But the next time someone shows you one of those pictures, why don't you ask them who those kids are? Because for all we know, we're looking at American children, because 1 in 25 American kids is now living below the poverty line. We're told we lack compassion. We want the immigration laws enforced. Folks, my compassion begins with American children. I feel bad for poverty anywhere in the world where it rears its ugly head. But first and foremost, I stand with my fellow Americans, irrespective of race, irrespective of religion, irrespective of ethnicity. If you're an American, then I stand with you. Americans need to stand together. We have self-hating Americans trying to lay a guilt trip on us, and it's time we push back. It's time we confronted them. It's time we confronted the lies. We have politicians from both sides of the aisle who could care less about the average American. All they care about is winning elections and getting those campaign contributions. Chuck Schumer, the architect of the agricultural amnesty provision of the 86 amnesty, and I tried to meet with him. I met with him briefly before 86, and he was the most obnoxious snot that I've ever met with in all my dealings with the people on Capitol Hill. Schumer believes that if you run the border, you're entitled to a pathway to citizenship. But recently he said that if you trespassed on the Brooklyn Bridge or the World Trade Center or the Manhattan Bridge, that the penalty of 1 year in jail wasn't enough. It ought to be 5 years in jail, because he said that's how you deter trespassing. Well, Chucky baby, how about going after people who trespassed on America and said you're going to get 5 years in jail? Or at the very least, someone sizes a 12 boot in their rear end as we send them back out of the country. He is willing to take a tourist and put that tourist in jail for 5 years for climbing the cable of the Brooklyn Bridge to get an artsy photograph. 5 years in jail, sneak into America in the dead of night, and Schumer wants to plant a big wet kiss on your forehead and give you a citizenship certificate. What in the world is going on? What kind of disconnect are we witnessing? Trespassing is trespassing. And I would argue that a foreign national who, under the cover of darkness, sneaks into our country without being inspected by that $3.3 billion a year inspections process poses a hell of a lot more potential threat to the safety of America and Americans than some tourists standing on the cable of a bridge in Manhattan taking a picture from an unusual vantage point. If Schumer thinks that that tourist is entitled to 5 years of free room and board, I want him to explain why he doesn't think that people who trespass on America shouldn't be put in jail. He lacks mouth-ear coordination. His own ears don't hear what he spews out of his own mouth, and he's not the only one. We saw terrible attacks in France. We saw how Belgium is reacting. And all the experts traipse up on TV, and everyone talks about the same thing, the vulnerabilities we face. Our immigration laws are our first and last line of defense. America's borders are our first and last line of defense. And if you have millions of illegal aliens wandering around your country, then you almost don't even have need for a military. The mission of the U.S. military, folks, is to keep our enemies as far from our shores as possible. Undoubtedly, a number of them are already here. I was on Ed Berliner's Newsmax program earlier today. I hope to get a link so that I can post it on my website so you can get to see the interview. First time I did an interview with Ed, and I got to tell you, did a great job. I'm normally on with J.D. Hayworth, one of my favorites. J.D. used to be a member of Congress. He's also on Newsmax. I pretty much do almost a show a week with J.D., and in fact, I met him when I testified before the Immigration Reform Caucus just 6 weeks after 9/11, so that's how far back we go. But, you know, Ed Berliner today asked me, he said, well, you know, we got to get that paranoid as a country that we want to strip search anybody who comes into the United States. And I said, well, it's not about paranoia, Ed. I said, you know, there's an expression in law enforcement that just because you're paranoid, it doesn't mean you're not being followed. You know, discretion is the better part of valor. And people who come into this country and evade an inspections process, and if you want to see the law, it's Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, but I'm not going to get into a law lesson here. But it categorizes the classes of aliens who are supposed to be kept out of the United States. Aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer severe mental illness and are violent or sex offenders, convicted felons, murderers, bank robbers, drug traffickers, gun runners, you name it, arsonists, human rights violators, war criminals, spies, and terrorists, all on that list. Aliens who are likely to become a public charge, or aliens who, if they work, would likely take the job of an American, or at the very least, drive down the wages and working conditions of American workers with similar jobs. Is there any category of alien that I just articulated that you think it would be unreasonable for us to keep out? Of those categories, who would you like to have living next door to you? And you need to know there is absolutely nothing in the law that distinguishes anybody by race, religion, or ethnicity. The other side, lying as they are, make it appear as though, oh, this is about brown skin or pink skin or polka dot skin or striped skin, you know? No. There is absolutely nothing in our immigration laws that distinguish by race, religion, ethnicity. It's about keeping out those foreign nationals who pose a threat to our well-being and survival. How stupid, how corrupt have we become as a nation that people who purport to be leaders, who wave the flag of rule of law, and then you say to the Mr. Rule of Law chairman of some committee, and this happened last year, Mr. Chairman, I asked him in a private meeting, if you're so strong on the rule of law, why won't you enforce those laws? Well, they can't be enforced. We can't deport 11 million. And this guy screams rule of law. Holy smoke. Rule of law, when? When it's convenient? When it's simple? We can't deport 11 million? How many motorists who speed can we stop? How many motorists who blow red lights can we stop? There's a campaign out there for texting and driving, and bad as it is, with immigration, I assure you, I guarantee you, I promise you, that there are far many more motorists with cell phones than illegal aliens in the United States. And yet, the campaigns are very clear. Same thing with drunk drivers, right? You drink and drive, we'll find you. You text and drive, we'll find you. We'll take your car, we'll put you in jail. Have you ever heard somebody say, oh, there's too many people with cell phones, we can't do anything about it? Of course not. Of course not. These politicians belong to the Pinocchio Club. They are puppets, and all we got to do is figure out who's pulling their strings. They are puppets with growing noses, and we got to find out who is pulling their strings. This is an absurdity. They will get Americans killed. But I guess for them, this will just be a matter of collateral damage. collateral damage. I spoke to one of the 9/11 family members whose son was killed on 9/11, and he said for those greedy bastards, the loss of his son and the other 3,000 people was the cost of doing business. We're at war, folks. Make no mistake. We're seeing it around the world, in Europe and elsewhere. And either we get serious, or we will sell our country to the highest bidder. And if, God forbid, America falls, it's not like, well, Canada will be number one and we become number two, or France or Germany. I could deal with that. It will be Iran, it will be China, it will be Russia. None of us can deal with that. Our survival is on the line. We can't underestimate the level of threat that we face. And we have a bunch of politicians. I got to tell you, the Republicans have that elephant for a for a mascot. The Democrats, appropriately enough, have a jackass for a mascot. But they all really have one animal that they should share, and that's a panda bear. Because all they know how to do is panda to people who write the check. If you get pulled over by a cop for speeding and you offer him a $50 bill, you stand a good chance of getting arrested. But if you can go to the mayor of that town where you're speeding and give him or her enough of a campaign contribution, I am sure that they will raise the speed limit for you. That's what corruption looks like, folks. The best government money can buy. We've gotten to the point where they should probably have a new position in the cabinet, the official auctioneer. Maybe they could hire the guy from the Meekum Auto Auction. As Martin Luther King's birthday approaches on Monday, I want you to think about how many American families in the minority community and outside the minority community, hardworking Americans, who've lost their jobs, stand to lose their homes, not because they're lazy. We hear this nonsense from the elitists on TV also, by the way. Oh, those lazy people. Yeah, how about that? They were basically fired so they could bring in people from India. And by the way, globally, India gets more remittances, more money wired home by their workers than any other country on the planet. And of course, the lying politicians, oh, well, they just want to come here and wash the clothing for you and mow your lawn and run your computers and go to college and replace Americans. When politicians tell you our schools don't turn out the engineers we need, it's a lie. And think about the lie. On the other hand, when foreign nationals go to the schools, we're told that now that they've been so well educated, we should be stapling green cards onto their diplomas. The diplomas are worthless when an American earns it. But when a foreign national earns it, we should fall down and prostrate ourselves in front of these people because they're all brilliant. Have you ever heard of a bigger bunch of self-hating Americans than our politicians? All they want is money. All they want is money. They don't care about the fate of America or Americans. It's astonishing. We need to support the politicians who support American workers and American families. There's a couple of real good guys out there, Jeff Sessions and Lou Barletta and Steve King and Louis Gohmert, John Fleming. You know, I was with Louis Gohmert and Jeff Sessions and John Fleming at a panel discussion. You could see it on Front Page Magazine. The video is available. It's called Immigration Wars. Check it out. Listen to what those guys have to say and contrast it with the Republican leadership has to say. Contrast it with what your elected representatives have to say. They're the role models, and they are swimming uphill. We need to help anybody who stands with us, we the people. It's good to join you this evening, folks. I thank you for stopping by, as it were. I hope you enjoyed my interview earlier in the program. But really, I urge you, get involved. Get involved, get involved. We are at crossroads. As I wrote for Front Page Magazine, we are on the precipice of anarchy. We truly are. And it's not just immigration. You know, we're providing driver's licenses to illegal aliens. The mayor of New York is giving identity documents to illegal aliens. We've almost eradicated the distinction between what it is to be a citizen and what it is to be an illegal alien. In point of fact, you're probably better off as an illegal alien today than as a U.S. citizen. We have ourselves to blame. We have ourselves to blame. We're at risk from terror attacks. The economy is suffering. And the last thing we ought to be doing is any kind of comprehensive immigration reform. This isn't a statement of xenophobia. It's a statement of reality. Welcome to the real world. And a thought for you. And I started to say this, and I think I did say it during the discussion I had at the beginning of the program. It is not anti-immigrant to be pro-enforcement. The immigration laws not only tell us who to kick out and who to keep out, but who to let in, and every year we admit more than 1 million lawful immigrants. It's a contradiction in terms, it's a contradiction in reality, to equate being pro-enforcement with being anti-immigrant. And you should know that it's the ethnic immigrant communities that are the most at risk from illegal aliens, especially when they're involved with serious criminal activity. Not just the Latino community, the Russian, the Asian, the Caribbean, the European community. Immigrant communities are the places where aliens who sneak into the country, perhaps because they're fugitives or criminals, that's where they set up shop among people they're most comfortable with, people from the same home country. And they're also in the position to threaten and then carry out the threat to do harm to people back in that home country if they don't play ball with the bad guys who come here. This is not what the American dream is all about. This is not at all what it's supposed to be about. We've never been in a situation like this with a bigger bunch of nitwits in Washington who absolutely refuse to stand with the average citizen of America. They stand with the corporations who hand them the checks. That's who they stand with. Unbelievable. But again, we the people can make the difference. These idiots are supposed to work for us. It's time that we made them accountable. It's infuriating to listen to the speeches, to listen to the nonsense, this mythical Latino vote. The harm done to the Latino community. Latino Americans and black Americans are suffering the highest rates of poverty, the highest rates of violence. It's the big lie, and too many people have been listening to it. It's time that we turned it off. It's time that we use rational thinking as the antidote to the lies. Remember, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. Please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Visit capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org, very wonderful website. Front Page Mag, The Social Contract, and Progressives for Immigration Reform, PFIR. By the way, I did write an extensive article for CAPS, California's Population Stabilization, on the way that all of this comprehensive reform and the administration's policies are hammering America on issue by issue. I really believe you'll find that article to be worthwhile. And if you like these materials, I urge you, please, please, please forward them to your friends and neighbors. We need to educate as many of our fellow Americans as possible. Again, as I said, democracy is not a spectator sport. See you next week, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a good weekend, everybody.